Oh, my peach blossom, you fill me with an all-consuming passion. I cannot live another moment without those tempting cherry lips. Come with me. You must be mine.
All right, my place or yours?
Oh, well, if you're going to quibble, let's forget the whole thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, and Joan Sims in...
No, stop messing about. Hello and welcome. First, an announcement. You can get it for 12 and 6 from any local stationer. Yes, yes, you'll have to be quick-minded or they'll all run out before you get there.
What's he talking about?
I don't like to ask.
I'm talking about my book, my autobiography. You must have seen it on the bookstores. It traces my entire theatrical life. I started as a small boy, you know.
Didn't we all?
Well, I didn't for a start.
And here with me, I have your actual proof copy. Yes, or your first pull, as it's known in the publishing world. Look at this photograph on the cover. That's me on the bearskin rug, kicking my little chubby legs. Absolutely starkers.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah, it's taken last week. And opening at chap one. Here we are. See the bold type?
Oh, yes. Who is he?
We were in the... We were in the Marine Commandos together. Believe me, this is one of those books that once you pick it up, you can't put it down again.
No,
it's bound in flypaper. That's rather a nice touch, isn't it?
No, it isn't.
Oh.
Don't do it again.
Well, please yourself. But getting back to my book, for only 12 and 6, you can get yourself an unautographed copy.
And they're the rare ones.
Yeah. I'd like an autographed copy, please. I wonder if you'd mind signing this one.
Oh, you've actually bought a copy? Oh, well done, Douglas. I never believed what they said about you. No. Not with those legs, I said. It's not possible. Certainly I'll sign it here to Douglas Smith, one of the best...
No, it's not for me. It's for my mother-in-law. She sent me this ghastly Fair Isle tie for my birthday, and I thought I'd get my own back with this book.
You dirty bastard!
Get on easy now!
I'll kill him!
I think you'd better announce something, Douglas.
Yes. For your further delight and delectation, we again visit the home of the Earl of Shotterley, who is waiting to show you another of his family heirlooms.
Well, welcome to Talpurgis Hall. It's not generally appreciated that I've got very artistic antecedents. In fact, the room I'm in today was often used by my great-aunt, the Countess of Cleavage. Yes, for her soirees musicales, which was the talk of the county, especially when she had them in the morning. Hanging on the wall is a rich tapestry said to depict 6 Vestal Virgins entertaining some visiting soldiers. Yes, with typical Roman hospitality. Or they may be the Sabine women. In either case, the detail is quite startling. To demonstrate the acoustics of this room, I've invited Madame Nesta Dimchurch, L-R-A-M, retired, to pop over on her bike and give us a tune on her cello. But due to an unfortunate accident while changing gear, her pizzicato is not what it was. Neither is her 3-speed. So her place will be taken at very short notice by Dibble, my gardener, who will be accompanied by her ladyship on the piano forte. No, not yet. Not yet. Dibble isn't ready.
I was just loose the
Well, don't. You'll give him ideas. No, Dibble. Don't put it under your chin. Shove it between your legs now. Be careful of that spike on the parking. My wife has chosen to delight you with her contrapuntal variations on a Shropshire Lad. Charming piece. Especially the opening movement. Yes, very lovely, very lovely. It has overtones of Siegfried in the middle of his idyll. Oh, dear. Now, are you ready, Georgina?
Yes, yes.
Right, get set, go. Oh, you've winged her, Dibble. Well played, sir. Right in the... Which reminds me of the immortal words of Longfellow. I shot an arrow into the air and hit the bullseye fair and square. But with the second, no such luck, I only goosed a sitting duck.
And now... excuse me. Hello? Stop messing about, 3953.
Hello? I am one of the list in millions.
A likely story.
Yes. The thing is, I feel that Kenneth Williams is uncalled for.
Well, he is.
Oh, good. I'll call for him.
There's no accounting for taste, is there? And now, it's Crackerjack and Audie with Mother Time, so pin back your tiny shell likes, because here's Maud Nethersole.
Hello, tinies, and biggies too. Today, I want to concentrate on the biggies, so that they won't feel left out in the cold. Here is a story especially for them. Once upon a time, quite recently, there was a mad scientist who wanted to rule the world. Apart from that, he had no ambition at all. And his wife used to say, "Ruling the world is all very well, Geoffrey, but will it pay a living wage? What are the chances of promotion?" And Geoffrey tried to make some sort of retort, but he couldn't. So he made a test tube instead and locked himself in the laboratory. Well, April turned to May, May turned to June, and June turned to Arthur, who was too close for comfort. And Geoffrey came out of the laboratory shouting, "Eureka!" Which means, "I found it" in Greek. "Pity you couldn't find it in English," said his wife, who by this time had lost her memory and the use of her elbows. Anyway, what is it?
"A cure for baldness," said Geoffrey. "I painted it on my bald patch and look, a shock of hair."
"It's certainly a shock," said his wife. "It's bright purple."
"Oh, well," he replied, "there's a few details to be ironed out, but look at the trouble Beethoven had with penicillin."
And then, from under a toadstool, for the house was very damp, stepped a little man dressed in green. And he said, "Hi, damn old buggy daddy, buggy daddy, buggy buggy."
"I see," said Geoffrey. "I am sorry that my experiments have made all the bells drop off your little hat."
And that's how Geoffrey won the Nobel Prize. But he never got to rule the world, which reminds me that it's time for a song.
I met a barefoot shepherd boy, a shepherding his flocks. He promised he would marry me if I'd knit him a pair of socks. I knitted several pairs of socks to warm his feet perchance, and also a vest to warm his chest, and several pairs of pants. But by this time the shepherd boy, he was already wed. And so I'm afraid the clothes I made were worn by his sheep instead.
People often wonder who is responsible for the health clubs that are proliferating up and down the country. Well, it's not me. But in this week's edition of Vardaying Back, we talk to someone who knows the business backwards.
Oh, hello. I'm Rocky Simpson, manager of Simpson's Gym, and this is Jim. Rejuvenating to Vardy a fine brown frame.
That's the piano. I'm over here.
Of course. Oh, Miss Sharp, straight out the knife box.
I must say, you both look in remarkably fine shape.
Oh, yes, Ducky. Well, we take good care of our bodies, don't we?
Oh, we do indeed, yes, yes. Well, you never know when they're going to come in handy, do you? And what you see before you is a triumph of matter over mind.
That's some triumph, but in his case,
yes.
He had no body at all when he started.
It's true. Anyway, I made up my mind to devote myself to the pursuit of the body beautiful.
And he's been pursuing it ever since.
I have. Talk about the loneliness of the long-distance runner.
Oh,
it's my story to the last.
Cycles round the park every morning, often as a dip in the serpentine.
Yes, I really must get them brakes fixed. Then one day, it come to me in a blinding flash, didn't it? Suddenly, in a blinding flash, why not pass on the secrets of my physical well-being to others?
Give everyone a share.
Yes. So I opened up my little establishment, and since then I have never looked back.
Never looked back? No. Well, hardly ever.
Well, there has been the odd occasion.
It must be a very rewarding work.
It is. The price that he charges. Mind you, he's had his share of heartbreak, haven't you?
Oh, don't tell him.
No, go on. Tell him about your secret sorrow.
Oh, no, I'd much prefer not to.
Go on, get it out.
To...
You'll feel better if you give it an airing.
It'll ruin my lunch.
Never mind that, tell him.
Go on. Very well.
Go on.
Well, see, soon after I'd opened my place, this fella dropped in for a workout and a massage.
Tell him his name. Tell him his name. It was Clint, wasn't it? It was Clint.
Oh, yes, well, he was a weightlifter and window dresser.
That's right.
Yes. And see, well, he wanted to enter this physique contest. He hoping to be Mr. Hackney Wick, I think he was.
That's right. After being Mr. Hackney Wick.
Yes.
Had all the qualifications to biceps on him like half a pound of walnuts.
Yes.
Oh, phantasmagorical Ducky.
Oh, yeah. You should have seen the definition on his lallies.
Oh, bulging.
Bursting
and
bursting
bulging.
Out all over.
Yes.
Bursting. Like June.
Like June.
Yes.
Bursting out.
Yes. Any road up, Clint suggested we might enter the contest together. If.
Yes, if. Tell him what the if was.
Go on. Well, if he could avail himself of the facilities of my establishment.
And he did avail himself, didn't he?
Oh, he did. Oh, there's no denying it. Dedicated he was. Any road, come the contest.
Yeah, come the contest, picture the scenes.
Yes.
Oh, Ducky, all the aficionados of Hackney Wick is assembled to witness this contest.
Yes.
The wings, the memorial, all crammed to bursting with hopeful young homies. Oh. Yes, then wait. Now, the lights dim. The first two contestants hear their names called.
Me and Clint.
Him and Clint.
Yes.
They step into the blinding spotlight. Two magnificent specimens of English manhood.
Magnificent.
There was a gasp of wonderment from the crowd. The band strikes up and then tell him what happened.
I can't.
Tell him what happened.
Go on.
Tell him what you and Clint started doing when the band struck up. Tell him what you and Clint started doing. Go on. Tell him.
The exhibition tango.
If music be the food of love, play on, give me excess of it.
Oh, lovely, Douglas.
Thank you, Miss Sims. and here to prove that nothing succeeds like excess are Peter, Paul, and Mrs. Nurse Poultice.
Fellas,
and the same to you. And what song have you for us this week?
Well, it's a bit of traditional folk dating back to the covered wagon days when pioneers were hitting the trail to the west.
Finchley West.
I'm sure it'll be delightful.
Oh, yes.
Oh, this is the story of sweet Molly Brown. Lives near the newsagent in Kentish town.
She stuck an advertisement up on his board.
Lady gives French lessons lately abroad.
A fella comes round and she says,
"Parlez-vous?"
The fella says, "Well, I don't mind if I do."
10 bob an hour, she says, smiling so nice.
And this fella said, "Blimey, it's cheap at the price."
His name it was Herbert, he says, "Call me Herb."
They sat on her couch and she taught him a verb.
And one or two phrases she thought he might want.
Like ferme la porte and la plume de marton.
And now Molly spends every evening with Herb.
His grammar is flawless, his accent superb.
And during each lesson he offers a prayer that he'll learn how to tell her in French why he's there.
Again, it's time for our film adaptation. This week, a western. Set in Mexico, filmed in Italy, dubbed in Spain, A Fistful of Dinero.
Nasty.
Our story opens in the small Mexican town of Santo Resguardo Tiranina Jardinero de Pintiparado Jarigonza. Which is rendered in English as Bogner.
It is the hour of siesta, and all we can hear is the sound of a Spanish guitarist coming through the window of the cantina.
Understand? I am Consuela. My enchiladas are the talk of the town. I think.
And I am the barman. I am Pepe. Especially after I've taken my tablets. Consuela, look, a stranger is riding into town.
I see him, all in black. Black a hat, black a shirt, black a guns, black a bicycle.
No, it's me. I'm the stranger. Everyone calls me the man with no.
No what?
They won't tell me. They're half rotten.
Late that night, the stranger lay in his room, listening to the noises of the little Mexican town. Far off, a dog howled. He checked his gun, then sat on the bed, idly spinning the chamber.
Well, it helps to pass the time.
Suddenly the door opened, and there stood Consuela with a rose between her teeth. She spoke.
What?
I said I got a thorn in my tongue. Listen, stranger. As soon as I saw you riding into the town with a cheroot around your shoulders and a half-smoked poncho hanging from your lips, I thought to myself, we got a right one here.
I see.
Yes. Oh, stranger, there is something you must know. I am troubled by the gringos.
Yeah, well, shut the door behind you.
A ruthless band of American outlaws. They are led by El Bisto, an ex-German who never wears a shirt.
Oh, I've heard of him, the fascist gun in the vest.
That's the one. He and his men terrorize this town. They kill the men and rape the women.
Rap?
Yeah, we thought it was a bit odd too. Still, if that's what turns them on, you know. This town has been waiting for a tall, dark stranger. You are tall, you are dark, and you're stranger than most.
Yeah, I'll buy that. Isn't there a marshal in town?
Well, there was, but he deliberately choked himself to death on a mouthful of boiled beef. He committed silverside.
That's terrible, isn't it? It's even worse than the fascist gun in the vest. Very well, I will do what I can. Just wait till I strap this on.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, oh, that's better. I never go anywhere without my Mickey Mouse watch.
That night, El Bisto and his men rode into town. An unshaven, ruthless band of evil-looking cutthroats.
Come on, men, let's have a drink in the cantina. Do you take luncheon vouchers?
Yes.
Good. First a drink. And be quick about it. I don't want to have to use my six-shooter.
I, Douglas Smith, play El Bisto's six-shooter. I'm exceptionally well balanced, and my trigger's been filed down, so the lightest touch sets me off. Some people think I'm a smooth bore.
And they're right.
But in fact, the inside of me has been rifled. I have the mother of pearl chasing round my butt, but I'm not interested. I pull a little to the left, and the way things are going, I may be fired at any minute.
Not before time. Let's get me back in. I'm up in my room, preparing for the fight with El Bisto. Now, where's my knife?
In between your teeth.
Well done, just stand there, go and fetch him. Yeah. What's that strange smell coming up from the bar?
It is the bandit leader, senor.
Oh, right. Here I go. It's time for the showdown. Showdown, you fool, not O-down. Honestly, I threw everything myself. All right, Bisto, your end is in sight.
No, please don't shoot. I didn't want to be a cruel, heartless, vicious thug. My mother, it was my mother, she wanted it for me. Think of my little ones. I have three of them.
Really?
Yeah. A young boy, a young girl, and my eldest. He is Juan.
Say that again.
We were so poor, senor. Even as a child, I used to walk around with the seat of my trousers out. The rent was always behind. Oh, senor. All we had to eat was beans, nothing but beans. Cruel wind was forever blowing through the broken windows. Oh, we were so poor, I couldn't afford to be born until I was three.
Mexican thugs I can stand. And actors I hate.
Yes, the bandit was dead. It was time for feasting and celebrations. The villagers toasted the handsome stranger with the drooping zapata. There was wine, there were women, and for teetotal celibates there was a little song. Sung, naturally enough, by the Trio de los Stop Messing About Eros.
Habanero. Since he shot off his small pistolero, through the girl in the town, he's a hero.
But I think they are wasting their time. Hooray!
Well, in the Mexican parlance, hacienda our film adaptation.
Oh, shame.
And finally, from bad to verse, a poem from Kenneth Williams.
The poor amoeba is unisexual. It's really rather ineffectual. No he's or she's. It seems a crime.
I wonder how they pass the time.
Yeah. That was Stop Messing About with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock, Joan Sims, and the Max Harris Group. The script was by Johnny Mortimer and Brian Cook and Miles Rudge. The producer was John Simmons.